Hello, everybody. This is Dane Gentry with the Standing Back Up podcast. This morning, I'm here with my special guest, Miss Wynn Charles. She was born with cerebral palsy. She is an author. She's completed the Kona Ironman Triathlon. Did I say Kona right? Did I pronounce that right?
Kona.
Okay. And she's also the CEO of her own jewelry design company and a motivational speaker. Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, I actually do have cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is an injury. It's a lack of oxygen at birth. I don't know how I got mine. I still don't know how I got mine. I was diagnosed with that in 87, and I started being an entrepreneur in 2006. When you say I was the CEO of my own jewelry company, I was a self-taught artist from 2006 to 2010. And in the midst of me being a self-taught digital artist, one of the things I did was stick my art on jewelry.
Right.
So in 2010, I landed up pivoting and transferring my love for writing due to unforeseen circumstance in my life that my family did not know was going to be happening. I myself did not know that was going to be happening either, losing my mommy. And so I lost my mommy in 2010. If that's not bad enough, wait for it. So I decided to write a book based on my childhood with cerebral palsy. And I decided to publish that book, self-publish it. Well, unbeknownst to me, people would buy it. That weren't my friends and family. Yeah. And people just followed my journey and just loved the positivity of cerebral palsy. And so I'm like, okay, we have a problem, because I didn't think that my book was going to take off the way it was. So now I have to market the book even more. So what did I do? At the time, I was listening to a podcast, How to Write Books. The Creative Pen by Joanna Penn. And Joanna Penn is a top self-published author. She left the job in accounting in London, and then she took the dive into self-publishing. Turns out she became a top self-published author. So at that time, I was struggling how to write a book and how to publish a book. And then one of the things she said was, you need to market a book. After you publish a book and you hit publish, they won't buy it. And it's not you build it, they will come.
Right.
You need to market the book. So then I thought, okay, how the heck am I going to market the book? And so I typed in to iTunes at the time on my phone, plus a purple button on my phone is my favorite color, and I wanted to see what that purple button could do. And so, at the same time, that purple button had nothing in it. But I knew it was podcast, and I knew it was related, and I hit the little magnifying glass on the side. And I typed in, well, first of all, I typed in writing, popped up Joanna Penn's podcast. Second of all, I typed in cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
crickets on Sailable Halsey. I thought, okay, something's wrong with this picture. And here I am with a book, and here I am wanting to market this book.
Right.
Why don't I create my own podcast and start interviewing people and start raising awareness of my disability, marketing the book. And so that's how that all started. It morphed over the years to now a CEO of a disability. Thank you very much. Because
look at you.
When you have a disability, taking care of yourself is a full-time job. So, and half my population is conquering their disabilities. My target audience is caregivers and people who are newly diagnosed, whether it's kids who are newly diagnosed, the teen that got in the drunken driving accident, who's now a paraplegic, and so, and then Podmatch rolled in my life, which I met the founder of Podmatch, Alex Filipino, and I met him through a podcast conference that we were both speaking at, believe it or not. And so I said to Alex, I will try. He was talking about this thing called Podmatch that he invented and he came up with. And I said, I will try it. I will try it. I will try it. And then gets to the point where I'm about to go in for back surgery on April 23rd. Of this year, so April, and I'm like, well, something needs to entertain me, you know? And I need to be entertained by podcasts, because other podcasts I listen to, even though they have new episodes, the voices were getting old,
frankly,
and I'm like, enough with this. So I joined podcasts a couple weeks ago, and it's changed my life, because I've met fascinating people, including you.
Thank you.
Podcast of the yin yang of you and everyone else that I've met. And so Podmatch has changed my life, and I think Podmatch is sticking around. And I know that podcasting is sticking around
too. I think podcasts are just going to keep growing, is what I think. And that's, you know, it came to me not by accident, but I had a dream about it. And I woke up one morning and I told my wife, I said, I know what I want to do. And she said, let's do it. And a friend of mine, actually a guy I met on TikTok. I don't know if you watch TikTok or not, but there's a guy on there by the name of Jason with a Felony. And he told me about Podmatch. And I like it so far. I've met, like you said, I've met some great people, including yourself as well. And I've done, I don't know, this is probably my 10th one or something like that from Podmatch. And I do a lot. And but that's kind of my idea. See, I didn't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to throw at it. So I said, I'll just outwork them. And so I do a show about every day, pretty close. That's kind of, I wanted mine to be real stories of real people, that's my thing. People that have struggled in life, no matter what you struggled with, but have overcame as yourself. You're amazing. I don't want to say that. It just, when I read your profile, I was like, wow, I've got to get her on and talk to her. She's going to definitely be an inspiration for people. And I applaud you for all you've done. So tell me this. So were you born with the name Wynn?
Yes.
They did give you the name.
Yes. Okay. They gave it to me as my biological name, and it was given to me by my mom. It was the inspiration behind my name, is my paternal grandmother's name was Wynn. So that's how it stuck in my life. And believe it or not, because people get so confused with it all the time, I get, well, my last name is Charles. And so I get Charles Wynn all the time on Diaride, on every medical paperwork I fill out. It's so funny because when I was in the hospital this last time, I was diagnosed with hypercalcemia, which means too much calcium in your bloodstream. And so I had to go to the hospital and get IV saline fluids. That was fun. Now, get stuck with IV saline fluids. But the first night I was there, didn't know how long I was going to be there, didn't pack anything, just rolled out of this house with my purse and knew that I was going to the ER.
Right.
Because I got a call from a doctor saying, you need to get to the ER now. And so I rolled out of this house with my purse and clothes on my back. So, and I had never got admitted to the hospital through the emergency room. I had always gone to the emergency room. I've been in the hospitals over 100 times now due to cerebral palsy and quite frankly due to surgeries. But this was the first time I have ever been admitted to the hospital through the ER. So I didn't even know. And my point being is when a friend of mine came to stop by to make sure that I was okay, she helped me order dinner. And she picked up the phone and they go, Charles Wynn? This friend of mine goes, that's okay. She gets it all the time. This friend of mine who is a newer friend goes, that's okay. She gets it all the time. No, it's Wynn Charles. And that story has been happening since 1987.
Wow.
They have stuck my last name as my first name on medical paperwork. And I'm like, okay. You guys.
That can be a little scary when they can't even get your name right, huh?
For a while there, as a young kid, I wanted to change my name, but I'm like, this is too much work, so I'll stick with Wynn. But I'm like, that's a little scary when they can't get the name right, especially in a hospital setting. I'm like, yeah, that's a little scary.
I think the name Wynn sticks because you've been a winner. Everything you've done, you've won. So tell me how you got into the triathlon, the Ironman. How did that come about?
I got into the Ironmans by my cousin who said to me right after my mom died, I have a surprise for you. And I'm the type of person that goes, well, just cut to the chase. Yeah. I don't like surprises. As a matter of fact, part of my cerebral palsy, I jump half a foot. I have a child's startle reaction. So in a 36-year-old's body, which is very annoying. So my startle reaction is quite high. So unless it's a good surprise and I kind of know about it, I will jump half a foot if people say the word hi. If people say the word hi, and I'm trying not to. I am trying to get over that, but it's in my DNA. So a person says, I have a surprise for you. Now, granted, this person is 1,000 miles away, and I'm like, what surprise do you have for me? Granted, she knew that her aunt died, she was there. And so I'm like, well, it's not a surprise having to do with your aunt dying, my mom. And I'm like, okay. So I said, okay, tell me the spies. And she goes, well, I want to go back to Kona, and I am taking you along with me, because the only way we can do it at the time was through the Iron Man Foundation. And because she was able-bodied, and my aide and I figured that one out by the end of this whole thing, because she was able-bodied, she needed someone to, she needed her doppelganger, which was me, to get 1,000,001 votes. And because my aide, who was a smart woman, said, well, how did B.A., Barbara Ann, get to Kona in the first place if she didn't win her age bracket? And I said, I don't know. And so we finally figured it out. And after many years of reflecting on it, she wanted me to come to Kona with her so that she could get back into Kona herself, which ended up being a total shit show in itself, because she was more about winning than cerebral palsy awareness. Okay. I was more about cerebral palsy awareness than winning the Kona Ironman. Yes, medal is nice, but raising awareness on cerebral palsy is even nicer.
Yes.
So, in the middle of the bike, it's a swim, bike, and run. For those of you that don't know what a triathlon is, in the middle of the bike, she goes, this is hard, as she's pulling someone up a hill. And I had trained like a mad woman once we figured this out, and I wanted to help pull the bike and help pedal the bike, but
right.
Due to the Kona Ironman rules, you can't. Kona Ironman is very, very picky about how much medical equipment you bring in. And I'm a racing chair, kayak. So by the time I got to the bike, Kona Ironman said, well, we can't have a win help pedal the bike. We need to stick win in a box. Literally, in a box where my legs were not moving. And in the middle of the bike, my teammate goes, this is hard. And keep me motivated. And like, you're the one that wanted to do this. You know that the Ironman at Kona is the hardest triathlon in the world. That's why they put it in Kona. And then because it's the Ironman championships. And
okay.
So I went back. In the meantime, I met a disabled triathlete team. At the time, they were called Care to Try, TRIs and triathlons. And now they're called Be Try for Us. And at the time I met them, they wanted to know my story. They remembered me, and we were chatting via text, chatting online, and they said, Wynn, do you want to do another triathlon with us? And of course, they're in Florida, I'm in Arizona. And I said, yes. And they go, well, let's set it up. So last December, I flew down to Florida with my aide, and I did a triathlon, and I'm trying to go back to Kona, compete in Kona by myself with a totally different teammate, with a totally different situation. But first, I need back surgery. And so that dream has been put on hold. My team now knows this because they text me, they follow me. So my dream has been put on hold, but I think in the next couple of years, I'm going back to Kona or back to the Ironman World Championships and competing again and actually winning and rolling across the finish line.
That's right. You're going to go win it. I believe in you. You've won everything else that you've tried, what it seems like to me. So,
exactly.
You definitely have the winning spirit, hence your name. You know, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think sometimes names mean a lot to people in life. You know, if we think about it, like a lot of times people who do great things have a different name. You know, it's like a, you know, you don't, it's always that, just that different name. And Wynn definitely goes along with you. What about your jewelry? How do people find it? And what all do you make? What all do you design?
I gave up that company.
But
still out there. It was really a digital art company. And I gave up that company for writing, but it's still out there. And people can go find me if they Google my name. And if they Google the word artwork next to it, they can go find me. And if they Google a CEO of a disability, that would be my podcast. And then they can go to a CEO of a disability.webelieve.com and find me there. Follow me on LinkedIn. Follow me on PodMatch, although I don't think you can follow a person on PodMatch. Yeah. But if people want to get a hold of me, they are more than welcome to follow me on Amazon, see what I do over there, follow me everywhere so you guys can get a dose of me. And unfortunately, on April 23rd, I have to go, which I opted into, you guys, I'll make that clear. I opted into this back surgery because I had to be my own medical advocate. I told people day one, as I was getting my scoliosis checked out, which is a part of CP, I already had a spinal fusion 16 years ago. Well, I said to them, something is wrong with my back. I can feel it. Something is wrong with my back. I've been on and off pain, and I need to get this checked out. I promised myself once I moved to Phoenix, Arizona from Aspen, Colorado, I would get it checked out. And because bigger cities have more medical resources. And so I got it checked out. They go, you're fine, go away. You just have scoliosis, which is true. I have a 10-degree curve. And they can't fix that. It has to be left where it is, long story short. But go away, you have scoliosis, you're fine. But we can give you the orders to go get a chest, a x-ray of your back. Well, by the time I got back to the doctors after the back x-ray, they're like, they look at the x-rays and they're like, oops, something is wrong with her back. We should have listened to her. And that started the medical journey from hell, basically, which has resulted in me. I tried every method under the sun. I've tried, I still continue PT. PT will never stop due to cerebral palsy. But I've tried PT. I've tried back injections, which back injections only works for one day. And they didn't work on me. They worked great for some. And then I tried everything else. And then finally, someone said to me, well, we need to get you a myogram, which is CT, which is contrast dye with injection in your back. And so that was an interesting story in itself. They tried three times to get contrast dye injected in my back. Finally, that worked, and I became a candidate to a back surgery. So on April 23rd, I'm marching into a hospital, a local hospital to me, and then I am having a 4 to 5 hour back surgery, and I will be regretting my decision for the next 6 weeks after that. But here we go again.
Yeah, you know,
back surgery.
Surgery's a big thing. I had an accident when I was a kid. I got hit by a truck walking home from school, and I had to have some surgeries. And I remember, wasn't back surgeries. Mine was all internal, but I remember waking up from it and the pain and just the, oh my goodness. And mine was my spleen, my kidneys, and my intestines.
Ow.
So, yeah, it was.
That's painful.
It's been a long time ago, but I still remember it. I remember it well. I was out. It was pretty bad. Then I had a blockage in my intestine and had to go back in and basically have the same surgery again. And I remember that one well too. And the recovery part of it and your back, I can only imagine. We'll definitely be praying for you.
I appreciate it. And no, all my fan base knows that I'm going to be a little bit in the communicable because my back surgery, and I go, when again? You're having back surgery again? No, but I am hoping that this will be my last major back surgery, and I keep wanting to kid people and say I'm going in for a cerebral palsy tune-up. I keep wanting to kid people and say that because those who know my story know, and also loved ones with the cerebral palsy, no, it's just the fact of life with cerebral palsy. Yeah. You have to go in and get surgeries and get poked and get, I'm so oblivious to butterfly needles to get burned out that it's like, okay,
yeah.
What's the next poke? And I didn't realize that they can poke hands if they need to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, poke hands, that wasn't a good thing. And so I didn't realize that I learned that along the way. But I'm like, so surgery and anesthesia and recovery is my middle name. I have spent so many summers in bed recovering that this one will be interesting, but at least it's in Arizona, where we have fabulous medical care. Phoenix has fabulous medical care, and I will say that publicly until I'm blue in the face. So I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I moved down here when I did, which was during the pandemic, and I'm lucky that I do have fabulous medical care now, hence all this new diagnosis I'm getting because I had poor medical care as a child. They tried to do the best they could with me, but the fabulous medical care was four hours away, 8 hours in a snowstorm, so in Denver, Colorado. But I decided to move to Phoenix, Arizona, so I'm very, very lucky that I moved to a city with fabulous medical care.
Yeah, I lived out in Tucson briefly for, I don't know, I guess 6-7 months back in like 2000. I loved it. I will say that. I loved it out there in the desert.
Well,
I did.
Arizona, and you agree with this, Arizona has its own beauty in itself. Now, I'm used to the beauty of Aspen, Colorado.
Yeah.
I'm getting used to the beauty of Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm also getting used to the drawbacks of living in a city of 3 million people now.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm used to getting on the bus and sitting there for 20 minutes to get someplace. And Phoenix, Arizona, even though it's lovely, it has its own boom because people like myself looking for a cheaper cost of living.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I live in Nashville, and since at the height of the pandemic, we were getting 750 people on average a week that were moving here.
Wow.
Oh, Nashville has changed. Nashville has changed in the past.
Yeah.
10 years, I'll say, really in the past 10 years, but really in the past five or six.
Yeah.
So many people are coming here from California and New York. And that was interesting. Everybody here will say the same thing that, man, we're always in traffic, you know. And I was having a conversation with a guy, and he was fixing a sink. And I asked him, you know, where was he from? And he said, Los Angeles, California. And I said, you know, what brought you here? And he said, number one, I'm a Christian. Number two, I have two little girls. And he said, out there, if you're a Christian, he said, it's like taboo. The people look at you like you're weird. So that gave me a different perspective on people coming here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't always know, you know? And it's like,
And a lot of people from California are moving here too, because the cost of living is so expensive. I know people that have moved from California across the country just to get a cheaper cost of living.
Yeah, it's what he was telling me. And then I saw Joe Rogan, you know, he's the number one podcast guy. He was talking about the difference in money. You know, he lives in Texas now. It's just the taxes, alone and different things, you know. You take someone like that who's got more money they're going to spend, you know, and they're telling you. So I could just imagine being, you know, working minimum wage and, you know, you just can't make it. You know, people can't make it.
No, I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it myself in Aspen. So I decided to sell my dad's house that was willed to me. And because no one else was on the deed, thank God.
Yeah.
And then I decided to take the capital. I wanted to sell my dad's house in 2010 after my mom and died, because I knew that he couldn't manage the house, and I wanted to either move him somewhere or move with him. But I wanted to have that discussion with my dad to sell the house, and of course that didn't happen. So the day he got diagnosed with lung cancer, I was not there, because I knew it. I knew in my heart it was lung cancer already. So I didn't want doctors coming in saying, Mr. Charles, you have the lung cancer and all this. And so I stayed back in the hotel. But one of the decisions I made is to sell the house, because he was either going to come home disabled or not come home at all. And the result was not come home at all. Mm. And I'm like, we need to get out of here. We need to get out of the high altitude, we need to go. And the funny thing is, he already Googled Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow.
In the hospital bed, he Googled Phoenix, Arizona. And so I'm like, okay, dude, Phoenix, Arizona, it shall be. And then my stepmom, of course, threw a fit at that, because I want to move to California. And like, you're not listening to the whole conversation. You're not paying attention to where the sick person wants to move. He's already resigned. So I would have been down here anyway, but I just moved down here myself because I got an amazing housing opportunity that I cannot turn down.
Yeah, it's a different. Being from Nashville and moving out there, it was different. It's hard to explain. That it's just a different feel there. For one, you have beautiful blue skies most of the time. That's for one. I mean,
I give it that. In fact, I'm looking at one right now as I record this.
Yeah.
I give Phoenix that. We also have beautiful sunsets. People.
Yes.
So if you ever seen a picture of the Grand Canyon, thank you very much, with the sunset. Yes, that's Arizona for you. And we also have beautiful sunsets. I'll give it that.
It is. I was there. I got there in September and stayed till I think June. So it was starting to get really hot, but it was still a different heat.
It's different.
Here we have all the humidity.
I'm not used to that heat.
Yeah.
Me and that heat don't get along. Me and that heat won't get along. And unfortunately, I can't leave the summer because of my back.
Yeah.
And I try and leave, go someplace else. I try and at least take 1 to 2 trips a year and leave, and maybe 3 trips a year and leave, primarily in the summer, which is what my team wants, which is what people want me to do, and my team wants me to do, and they fully agreed to funding the trips. But yes, and I have help due to financial reasons and due to age reasons too. And so my team agreed to 2 trips a year, but they said, well, take it in the summer because it's hot and it's miserable. So, unfortunately, when I have the surgery in April, I can't leave in May.
No, you're getting close to that. It's less than a month away for the surgery now, yeah. too, huh?
Yeah.
Are you nervous? Are you nervous about it?
No. Being that I'm so used to anesthesia, I'm so used to going into the hospital. I'm so used to, because as I said, I've had over 100 surgeries. I'm just not used to having the amenities of my house close to the hospital.
Right.
I'm getting over the fact that it's not going to be a 4-hour drive. It's not going to be a long drive. It may be a 15-minute drive, depending on where they put me at rehab. So I'm still getting over the fact that Phoenix has amazing medical care, and I'm still getting over the fact of the beauty of Arizona. But am I nervous about my back surgery? No. And I say this publicly, no. I'm just used to it. I mean, when I wake up from back surgery, it's like, are we done yet? If they say yes, if they say I did great, I'll give them the thumbs up sign and say, feed me and make me move. I don't care.
Yeah.
And so, no, I'm not nervous. People know. I made the decision. I opted in for this. This wasn't given to me by a doctor. A doctor didn't wake up at me and said, you need back surgery. This was my decision for my quality of life. And then with age, the back will deteriorate. But as long as I have a stable back at 90%, I'm happy. As long as I can keep my mobility, the little mobility that I have, it's going to be perfectly fine. Because I can do transfers like this, no tomorrow. The only reason why I'm in a power chair is because of my back. My back won't hold me up to walk. But I have the use of my legs.
Okay.
So the only reason why I'm in a power chair is for safety reasons.
Okay. Is this surgery going to help you with that or no?
I will probably gain an inch when I have it. But my ultimate goal is if I can walk, just take a couple of steps, that will be great. That will be a miracle and a half. But they say that my mobility will stay the same. But you never know what the higher powers and the good Lord will do to me. So maybe, I don't know. I lost my mobility in the last one, so maybe I'll gain back at 16 years. We never know. But they have said that this will help my back, not this will keep my mobility, but not necessarily help my help me walk again.
Well, like you say, we'll pray, and like you said, it's up to the good Lord. You know, and I love that you said that. Your book. Tell us where we can find your book. Did you mention that a while ago where we can find it?
Amazon. You can find me on Amazon. I Come a Win on Amazon. I Come a Win is an old book to you guys. Old now. But I'm working on my 13th, 14th, and 15th book. So if you click the follow the author on Amazon, it's a big follow button. Just, and then you get emails as to what I'm doing. It will even announce on the smart speakers, the Amazon smart speaker, and I believe on Google too, it will announce Win Charles has up. Also, you follow Win Charles has published a new book. And so, yeah, that's how I do it. So if you guys go follow me on Amazon, you can keep up with me that way too.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to get everybody to follow. I get these shows out fast too. It'll be out today.
Yep.
I get them out quick. I don't do a lot of editing. I don't see the point in all the editing stuff. What's said goes.
You're like me, Dan. Yeah. You're like me, Dan. I can't edit due to my cerebral palsy. And people like Win. We love you, but people like you need to edit your show. And I'm like, well, if you met me in real life, you would understand why I don't get it. And so I'm like, you get what you get. And so I turn around my episode quick. And so I don't, people that edit, that's a wonderful skill, but I don't have it. I can't do it because of my disability. I have an excuse not to edit.
I just tell people when they come on, if something happens that you would like for me to take out, I will.
Yes.
But I would prefer not to. I prefer to just, whenever I'm done, I'll wait throughout the day and get other things done. And then in the evening time, I'll sit down, I come over here, I download it, and I publish it. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
And that's it. And
Dan, let me tell you, you're going to have a broken download feed. Thank you very much because of me. Yeah. People have told me that. People go, when my numbers are little and people come back to me when the episode is published, they go, man, my episode numbers have raised. Why? And I said, because of me. And they go, it's because of you. It's because you that people like to hear my story.
Yes.
And I'm like, all I did was have a podcast about cerebral palsy. What's the deal? What's the deal with you people? I love it, but I'm like, what's the deal? All I did was share the chronicles of cerebral palsy to begin with.
You know what it is? I'm going to tell you what it is. It's because we as people can very easily get caught up on little bitty things. And then when we see people like yourself who... you don't let nothing stop you. You have not let anything stop you. And most people would. And we give up. And we always remember, hey, we can do things, man. We just got to do it. We got to believe in ourselves no matter what we got going on.
Yeah.
And we can overcome and we can do it. Like you said, we may not win the lottery. That's something completely different. But we can do, we can get things done. Whatever our dreams are in life, you know, I didn't have dreams as a little kid because I got on drugs so early. And I was a drug addict for so long. And so that held me back. And so what I found that in sobriety, whatever my dreams are, I can achieve them in it. And I do it every day. And people may not agree with like my podcast. They may say, oh, you need to edit. You need, no, I don't. And I'm not going to, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do it my way.
You're going to do it your way. And yes, I have followed your journey. So I know about the sobriety end of it, and good for you. For those of you who are trying to become sober, I became sober in 2019 after my dad died. I thought, well, the main reason why I became sober is because I had to grow up. I grew up as a 23-year-old adult my year of 2023, turned me into a lot. But I was still drinking. I still had the wine glass in my hand. But when my dad got diagnosed and they came back, my stepsister and stepmom at the time came back to the hotel, gave me the news, because my stepsister was the one in charge of giving me the news, because my dad asked where I was, and my stepsister said a little white lie. She goes, "When is at the hotel doing homework?" Because at the time I was working on my journalism degree, which my dad supported, so he understood that. And so my stepsister said to me, "Do you want a glass of wine?" Yes, we had wine in this hotel room 24 hours before I had to. I was on the phone. I hear the knock on the door. They, a person had delivered a box of wine. Now, I'm the one having to sign for it. And that was when my dad was getting officially diagnosed. And my stepsister the next day said, "Do you want a glass of wine to take the edge off?" And then I'm like, "Well," I said, "Yes, to the glass of wine." And then I'm like, "This is nuts. This is nuts. If he's getting diagnosed with cancer and I'm sitting here in my salt drinking a glass of wine, how am I supposed to be functioning when I get home? And how am I supposed to be making those decisions if I'm after the one glass of wine at night?" And I'll admit that publicly, and for those of you that have a sobriety podcast, let me come on and share my story about that. Because, and after that, I have been, since I moved, I've been doing Codependence Anonymous, which is a mental health support group all across the country, internationally too. And Codependence Anonymous has changed my life. Living on my own has changed my life, because I got emotionally and physically abused on June 23rd, 2019 by a family member. And no, the aide did not abuse me. The aide did not touch me. It was my family member who had an accomplice with her. The accomplice added fuel to the fire, and the accomplice egged my abuser on, and I reported my abuser to Adult Protective Services. My abuser now wants nothing to do with me. And I'm ready to apologize to my abuser. I will never forget, but I'm ready to forgive if my abuser ever comes calling. Right now, she wants nothing to do with me. Her accomplishment and her partner in crime still wants things to do with me. And so, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And your heart to forgive.
And it took me a long time to get to that point. And it also took me a long time to figure out what cerebral palsy was and is. And after I got emotionally and physically abused by this family member, we went through the case of getting all the records. They got called by Adult Protective Services and the Pickens County cops. Pickens County is Aspen, Colorado, by the way. And so they got called by the Pickens County cops and Adult Protective Services. And when I went into Adult Protective Services, they sat me down and said, "When we need to do a professional interview with you." When this whole thing started, I was walking out of counseling because I had told a counselor at the time, she asked me, do you feel safe and calm? And because she knew I had cerebral palsy, she knew my dad died, and she knew I had a disability. So she asked me, do you feel safe and calm? And I said, yes, but this is what went on, because my abuser, the dum-dum, didn't realize that she was abusing a mandatory reporter. And I have a background in education, early childhood education. I taught for 10 years, despite my cerebral palsy. And I taught for 10 years through becoming a teacher. You have to get mandatory reporter training for the kids. And for those of you that don't know what a mandatory reporter is, it's basically, in teaching language, it's basically if someone said, if a kid says, mommy hit me, and the kid appears with bruises all over the place, then you have to report it to Child Protective Services. So long story short, we get trained in all this, and I always had that in the back of my head when I was teaching, but my abuser didn't realize that she was abusing not only her niece with a disability, but a mandatory reporter. So I'm like, what does a mandatory reporter do after she got abused?
You're right.
And I'm like, do I call Adult Protective Services? Because anyone can call Adult Protective Services. But do I call Adult Protective Services 24 hours after, or what do I do? So I figured it would be the safest choice to report it to a counselor, say that to a counselor, and it turns out the counselor picked up the phone after I left and called Adult Protective Services on my behalf. And then when I walk out of counseling that day, I go looking for my aid. I thought my aid was in the bathroom. I knew where vehicle was. I knew where her, I knew she had time off. I thought she was in the car reading a book or doing something. And so when I was at my counseling appointment, so I start looking for my aid because I don't care. I'm about to go downstairs, take the elevator by myself downstairs to meet her outside. And a perfect stranger to me goes, are you looking for your aid? And they go, your aid is in Adult Protective Services. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
It clicked in my head what my counselor had done, because I'm so used to hearing people say, well, if a kid showed up with bruises all over them at school, call Child Protective Services. So it clicked in my head. I'm like, oh boy. So then I had my, people don't know this part of the story, but I'll admit it here. I said, I had my counselor walk me over to Adult Protective Services because I was scared the living daylight out of me. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen next. So they sat me down and said, when we need to have a professional interview with you. And I'm like, okay, because by that time it clicked in my head that they now knew about the case. And I said, well, fine. Has my stepmother been informed? My stepmother at the time. And they go, yes, we called her on her cell phone. She was at work. She wasn't with me. She has a full-time job, had a full-time job as she was taking care, trying to take care of me, I should say. And so they called her at work. She knew what was going on. A couple days later, I get a call saying, I almost get a call saying the professional interview was canceled because the professional interviewer knew my name and didn't want to spoil the case. I said, no, let's leave it. I'll just be professional as I can. Now, I have given interviews to people in the past, but this is the first time I had ever been involved with Adult Protective Services. So I was professional. I sent my case. And each witness, my aide, my stepmom, my stepsister, also said the same thing. And it turns out that 2 weeks later, I'm sitting outside my counseling office. The Adult Protective Services person goes and grabs my stepsister and says, I have an update for you on Wynn's case. Do you want to come in and talk to me? And she goes, yes. And then she meets me outside my counseling office. I go into counseling. My stepmom and her go about their merry way, and I go into counseling, and my stepsister comes out, and I ask her what happened because I heard all this. She goes, we're going to have this conversation when we get home. Mm-hmm. And turns out that all the stories had matched up. Myself, my witnesses, and they go, do not have contact with Marianne Pledge if you ever want. I wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole. Do not have contact with Marianne. And I said, no way, I'm not going to have contact with my godmother who abused me. And I thought, well, and I'm starting to think of this now too. And I'm thinking, if she was my godmother, when I got baptized in the Catholic Church, doesn't it say help the child when the parents die? Not abuse the child when parents die.
That's terrible.
And yeah, I'm like, yeah, godmother, you're supposed to help me, not do the opposite end of the spectrum. Support me. And of course, she was the baby sister to my mom. And of course, yeah, that's a whole different story in itself. But I'm like, you're supposed to help me not do the other end of the spectrum. So, and then I got an amazing housing opportunity down here. And hence, that's why I personally moved. I needed more support. I needed more care. I needed more love. And I needed more medical services. But hence, my abuse has stuck with me. And I'm ready to forgive my abuser. I won't forget, but I'm ready to forgive. But if she ever comes a calling and wants forgiveness, I'm forgiven because she lost her sister too in all this. So when she lost her brother-in-law in all this, so that's the only reason I'll forgive her. But yeah, since then she's not had anything to do with me since 2019. She thinks I'm evil, and so
you're evil.
I see.
Wow.
It's an needle. Yeah. And yeah. Apparently, in Adult Protective Services eyes, she said I did nothing wrong. My abuser said to the Pickens County cops and Adult Protective Services, I did nothing wrong.
Knowing that she did, knowing what they did.
That she did, and knowing that, and the reason why I reported her is because she did something that I won't mention. And
yeah.
I thought, well, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
If you do that again, I will report you. And yeah. And
I'm so sorry you went through that. And I hear these stories.
Yeah.
I hear them a lot, especially when it comes to women in addiction. It all started a lot from a child, you know, things went on.
Yeah.
We don't have to mention them either. And it's heartbreaking. I never had to deal with any kind of abuse as a child like that.
Well, good.
Thank the Lord.
I didn't have to deal with it until I was 33. The day after I turned 33, which we're coming up on the anniversary of that, and it's going to be interesting. I'm slowly with counseling and slowly with Codependence Anonymous getting over the fact that she controlled me into submission and she did what she did. And unfortunately, she didn't realize that she was abusing the man until I reported it, and she didn't realize that I had the power to call Adult Productive Services. Anyone can. And I have spoken to ex-cops and spoken to every which way. That story is, my abuse story is public because I'm emotional and physical abuse survivor, but I will all stand for people who are emotionally and physically abused or even sexually abused, quite frankly, because I know how tough it is. And then if you are in that situation and listening to this podcast or listening to any of my work, always try and report it to the next mandatory reporter you see, whether it's a counselor, a priest, a social worker. Social workers can do it depending on case. And or you can call Adult Protective Services yourself. But in the moment, if you try, and at least in my case, and thousands of other women's cases and men's, and thousands of other people's cases, if you try to get to a safe space and even send a text message, which was my idea while the abuse was happening, I was going to send a text message to all three of my witnesses who were at the house, who were at my house at the time. One was next door to my bedroom. One was in my kitchen / my living room. One was upstairs in my master bedroom. And then out of my ex-house. So I'm like, but I've learned that, and I literally had to back up against the sink. I've learned that the abuser won't let the abusee go to call for help.
Right. Yeah. That's another thing on these podcasts. I have people on, you know, that go through certain, and that's what I always say, and that's what I wanted you to say, and you said it, is reach out for help. Tell somebody what's going on.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to stop if you don't. That's for sure.
And one other fact I'll give you, because I just found this out the other day, 86% of disabled women, or 86% of the disabled are physically and emotionally abused, because we tend to be the abusee because we can't move.
that is terrible. I mean, how can... It's two things, man, that I don't understand in this world. Three. How do you harm a child?
The other fact I wanted to tell you is that it could be anyone down the street. A lot of people think when I tell my abuse story that it was the aides were they didn't have anything to do with it, and the aides were standing by me and they didn't have anything to do with it. And so it can be anyone. It could be a close family friend. It could be aide. It could be a family member. In my case, it was a woman abusing another woman that couldn't move but had the intelligence to know that she was getting emotionally and physically abused and knew how to report it. And a lot of people don't have the training that I did, at the time. And so they just sit in submission, and it's like, and then the abuser does it even longer, and I'm like, yeah, we need to get out of here, and we need to report this, and we need to, yeah. But my stepmom didn't say get the heck out of Wynn's house, which you can do. You can call the cops and get people out of your house. I have talked to it. I have talked to cops about that, ex-cops. And so, and if worse comes to worse, you can do a welfare check on someone in a different state if that needs to be done. But my abuser did not know that. As I said, she did not know that she was abusing a mandatory reporter. And I think if she did, she would have had a whole different attitude.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, bless it. Thank the Lord that you made it through it, one, and that she got reported and found out and the abuse stopped. All right, young lady, I want to thank you for your time. This has been awesome for me.
Thank you.
We'll do it again. I want to hear about your surgery and how things go.
Oh,
for sure.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of podcasters want the surgery update now.
We want to know. I want to know whenever you get ready to win that triathlon too.
Yep. I will let you guys know that too. I will let the public know that too. And I appreciate it, Dan.
Yes, ma'am. No problem. Everybody out there listening, listen to her story. You know, whatever you got going on in life, we can overcome. Put God first, and we can do amazing things in life, and we can do amazing things for others. And the last part of our story there, if you are dealing with any kind of abuse, please reach out and tell someone. Don't keep going through it. The abuser will not stop abusing you if you do not tell someone. So find a way, whatever you have to do. If you have to write a note, whatever it is, let somebody know. That's the only way it's going to stop. God bless you, ma'am. And I'll talk to you next time. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Bye.
Good luck in your surgery. We'll pray for you.